How do you feel when you switch to Geico and save on your car insurance? It's like going to work on one Thursday morning and thinking to yourself, just one more day until Friday. But then somebody in the elevator says, Happy Friday! Then you check your phone quickly and discover today is actually Friday. So yes, Happy Friday, random stranger in the elevator. Happy Friday indeed. Yep, switching and saving with Geico feels just like that. Get more with Geico.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is John Pollock and waiting, coming at you at 9:45 p.m. Eastern time.
Amazing.
I love you, 6 p.m. start times. Oh, my God.
The real trouble, Chief.
I'm just upset they did this once, and it sounds like this is a one-off, and it's almost like you've dangled this in front of me. I love this. This was one of the all-time greatest shows of all time because we're here at 9:45. I have learned that I am a real pain in the ass when it comes to complaining about how late these shows go and such. But you know what? I have to put up with UFC on the East Coast. So you know what? I get to complain, but I'm not going to complain at all. This is a glorious time period. Me and Wei are going out afterwards. We're going to hit the town, and we're going to have a glorious night into Sunday morning celebrating this early end.
Do we know why they decided to start the show so early?
I don't know what the time was. I mean, I remember hearing over the summer when Money in the Bank was here and hearing from someone at WWE, and because this is when they were shifting to 7 p.m. And the feeling that was conveyed to me was that, you know, they are trying to get to make it as accessible to as many people as possible. They have younger viewers and such. So that makes sense. And 7 p.m. seems to have been the regular start time. And I believe that's what they are advertising for Royal Rumble. I don't know what this one-off was. It's not as though they had to be done. Like, we've seen them try to avoid, like, going head-to-head with the UFC pay-per-view portions, but there was no UFC card tonight or anything. So, obviously, there was a reason. If they do this again, zero complaints. Like, absolutely none. You imagine? This is on the West Coast in Vancouver. These folks getting out of this show, it's 6:45.
I know. Wow. What do you do with the rest of your day? Yeah, it's very unusual because we usually be like halfway through a show. Like I'm still in my mind programmed to recognize pay-per-views as starting at 8 p.m. And by the time 8 p.m. came around tonight, the main event was starting. You know, it was pretty crazy.
I still can't sit down and watch these live. It's just I have to pace myself. There's so much in between that you can get stuff done. Like I had dinner in the middle of this show. It was like you can just put this on pause and come back. You'll be caught up exceptionally quick.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So tonight we're going through the Survivor Series, and we will be taking feedback from the forum. So if you want to leave your feedback, forum.postwrestling.com is where you can submit that. But it is the Rogers Arena in Vancouver, British Columbia. And I know that we have many, many fans over in Vancouver, and they're all awaiting to get home early so they can run on over to chop-tees.com because it's Black Friday weekend and our sale still going on. And I know that with this extra time, people are going to sit down and say, now is the time after this early end. I need something to really make my weekend even greater. It's a post-wrestling varsity jacket, limited edition, and they are few and far between remaining. I think we're in the single digits that we have left of these jackets. So one can be yours, but if you're not of the varsity jacket variety, man, you can't go wrong. You could throw a dart blindfolded, and you're going to land on fashion greatness on the post-wrestling stores up at Chopped-Tees.
Black Friday sale goes on until Wednesday. You know, maybe in honor of the Canadian PLE tonight, maybe you want to pick up a post-wrestling Canada logo hat. Really, look at this. Everything's on sale, including the hats, including the shirts, including all the accessories and the varsity jackets, as John Pollock has mentioned. So chop-tees.com/post-wrestling.
And how long does this sale go until?
Till Wednesday.
Okay, well, yeah. Hurry up. Everyone's storming the digital store, elbowing people, trying their best to get their hands on these jackets. I have seen online videos of people going after these jackets. They are a hot item. So secure yours and don't be left out. And I'm sure some people were left out of attending the Rogers Arena because this was a sellout on Saturday. Last number from WrestleTix was 17,249. Michael Cole announcing 17,828, so almost a wash with the WrestleTix number, and calling this the highest grossing arena event in Canada for WWE. So this, I would imagine, would come all but ahead of the two WrestleManias that they ran, which I would even be curious if this would top the 1990 gate at Sky Dome. But I am sure you paid dearly for these tickets and got to see the show.
Yes, yes. Now, they did not do like a mid-PLE announcement. They didn't have, Seth Rogen come out and be like, hey, guys, guess what? You know, Vancouver, we did it.
No, that could have been Chelsea Green's role. She could have taken credit for drawing this record, this arena record in Canada. Yeah. But
I'm sure Levesque will have a big celebration right now at the press conference.
Post is going head-to-head with the post show from WWE. We're way more, we'll be much more forthright in our answers.
But I mean, get used to these records being broken. I imagine the next time they come around to Toronto, for instance.
Oh, Elimination Chamber is going to shatter everything. Elimination Chamber will be the new Canadian record. Like, I am sure that's going to eclipse the WrestleMania number. Yeah. But that was the number that they announced. A two-hour pre-show that I want to proudly say I got through in about 8 minutes. Because I do feel a responsibility, because I imagine none of you watch this. We had Gunther and Ludwig Kaiser interviewed by Kathy Kelly. Kaiser stating it's a special night and the IC title has lost all prestige since Gunther lost that belt. He's going to restore that prestige, and Gunther tells him to go out, bring that title back. Bron Breakker, sporting a Scott Steiner 2000 WCW t-shirt, noted that he respects both Kaiser and Sheamus, but I'm not the guy for you two to be trying any of this with. Sheamus, you just like to have your bangers. You go online reading the internet like a nerd, thinking you're owed this title. Well, guess what? I played for the Baltimore Ravens. Am I owed a Super Bowl ring? You belong in a retirement home, old man. I'm really starting to enjoy this man's promos. They're coming together very proficiently, I think.
How old is Sheamus? 46. I mean, I guess compared to Bron Breakker, sure.
And then, in the most, like, clumsy, they should have done this in front of the crowd. It would have been so much better. But instead, Kathy Kelly interviewed William Regal in, like, a hallway backstage in the dark. And he notes that I was on the card of War Games in 1993. I was not in War Games, but I was on that card. And Kathy says, William, can you announce what tonight's match is going to be? And Regal gets choked up. He says, can you count me in? Oh, just give me a second here. I haven't done this in a while. War Games. As they do crickets. It's like, why did we do this? This is where they did this. It got no reaction. And Kathy Kelly was just like, great. This was amazing. Back to you guys. This was the most awkward moment.
I guess else would you talk to William Regal for a War Games show?
Except if anything, that. I would have just had him like interviewed at the panel or something. At least have the crowd. It's like an easy pop. But anyway, they felt the need for this. They also did these top 10 Survivor Series moments throughout the 2 hour show. Interestingly enough, I don't even know if I skimmed through the show. It might have been listed, but in a sign of the times, like none of the at least top three that I saw here were Brett and Shawn. Their top three Survivor Series moments were number three, The Shield's debut, number two, Punk's return last year, and number one was The Undertaker's debut in 1990.
Interesting. I guess why open that can of worms?
Well, I agree, and I think in another time period that would be they would be reminding us. Last time we were in Canada for the Survivor Series, but none of that tonight. And then Elizabeth Irving sang the national anthems as we go into the show, the 38th Survivor Series. Wow. Does that make you feel old?
I think Bron Breakker is about to cut a promo on the Survivor Series for being too old.
Go to the retirement home, old man. This is Fall Brawl. Michael Cole and Corey Graves are on the show. Even the BC Lions get a shout out off the top. Did you see some of the complaints about the Survivor Series merchandise they were selling? And they include the Seattle Space Needle as part of the backdrop of the Vancouver landmarks.
Oh no!
There's a lot of criticisms. Like, when did Vancouver get a Space Needle? could have sworn that's across the border.
Yeah, I mean, I guess you can't even see it from Vancouver.
It's like Buffalo putting out merchandise with like the CN Tower.
Yeah.
I don't think Vancouver gets to claim the listen, Vancouver has some beautiful scenery, but the Space Needle is not one of them, I don't think. I don't associate the Space Needle with that. Nor did WWE when they ran that WrestleMania in Seattle and used the Space Needle so prominently. But we digress. Kicking things off is the women's War Games match with Rhea Ripley, Bianca Belair, Bayley, Naomi, and Io Sky against Nia Jax, Liv Morgan, Tiffany Stratton, Candice LeRae, and Raquel Rodriguez. So 5-minute first period and then 3-minute intervals until everyone is in. Then the match officially begins and can end in pinfall or submission. It is not screaming to surrender as the ending here. So that was the setup here. And we are starting off with Bayley and Nia Jax. And the beginning part here, we had a great moment. WWE on top of things, they want to bring you right into the action. And boy, did they, as they did this close-up of Bayley right on the apron, telling Nia, elbow. And wouldn't you know it, Nia then struck her with an elbow. So bringing you right into things. And then, pretty basic stuff here that the two had with Jax whipping Bayley with a piece of her attire that Bayley had taken off to try and use as a weapon. That we were going to slowly intensify the weapons, starting off with Bayley's wardrobe as a whipping device. Third was Naomi, who's wearing a birthday crown, which they explained here. It's her 37th birthday. Happy birthday, Naomi.
Yeah, November 30th.
Yes. Is she going to a new retirement home? I think 37, she's safe from the wrath of Braun.
I hope so. Yeah.
So she brings in a kendo stick, and the most utilized weapon, I think, in this whole match, the toilet seat.
Yeah.
They got a lot of use out of this toilet seat.
To my knowledge, I think the first time we've ever seen a toilet seat in a War Games. Why not?
First for everything. Mm-hmm. The crowd was singing happy birthday at Naomi, who places the toilet seat on Nia and gives her a stink face. Graves still finds Rikishi's
homage
version.
To a father-in-law.
Yes, but Graves did find Rikishi's still more offensive than this.
Okay.
Candice LeRae was in fourth. Stratton was about to enter when Candice LeRae sidestepped her, and she entered ahead of Stratton. She brings chairs into the ring, and if anything, I was glad they kind of cut this pattern out by the men's match, but just we have two people start and then it's eight entrances and eight people just going to the tickle trunk to bring out the weapon of choice here. Like we're watching Carrot Top here do a set. It just became a little bit repetitive and it's like this every year for the WWE War Games matches. And then finally Jimmy Uso was like, F this, I'm bringing my fists and my kicks.
It's an easy reaction, depending on what the weapon is. And I guess
toilet seat didn't get as much of a reaction, but
it got a reaction. The toilet
did it?
Seat. Okay, yeah. Well. Maybe I don't know if it's the type of reaction you want for a serious match like the War Games, but I mean, it did get a reaction.
So LeRae brings in chairs and that prompted Nia Jax to take the chair and deliver some of the most awful chair shots you will see on national television. These were the worst chair shots. I am all for people hitting people in safe places, but these were such weak chair shots, and it looked terrible. Terrible.
The coordination left something to be desired, where I think she would lift the chair up, and then her victims would either cover, and Nia would...
Naomi put her arms up, and Jax held up. Like, she didn't want to hit her, and it was like time stood still for 5 seconds.
And so she went for the gut, but then Jax went after Bayley, who did not hold her hands up, and kind of prompted Bayley to hold her hands up so she can attack her in the waist. It was, I think it lacked some coordination. So
yeah. And then we had, it was just, that was followed by these chairs set up, and Bayley was placed on the middle chair for a quebrada by LeRae, who just with the chairs there, she almost made no contact here coming down on Bayley. So there were some issues here with like some of the contact, but we continue on. Bianca Belair came in with trash cans, and Belair moonsaults off the corner holding a chair and then hits almost like a Van Damminator to Jax. Sixth was Tiffany Stratton, who brings in a trash can and a trash can lid, attacking Belair and Naomi with it, and works together with Jax as they high-five, including a double-team blockbuster Samoan drop on Belair as the heels are dominating the period until Naomi gets some chair shots in at the end. Then Io Sky entered, who I thought was the best performer of the 10 in this match. She comes and grabs the trash can from underneath. It's a purple trash can. It's her special trash can, which comes with a rope to fasten around her to climb the fence with. I have no issue with this for someone that realizes, listen, this is my spot, and I am going to get here in the afternoon, and I'm going to Bob Vila the hell out of this trash can so that I can make the easiest entrance with this trash can. As she climbs up, and there is a platform at the top of the cage where the trash can would sit and just let it linger, as we knew Io would make her way back to this platform.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Why go through the door when you could go this direction? So Jax then runs Sky over at the end of the period. I thought Sky was very strong here when she was when she was added to the match. Eighth is Raquel Rodriguez, and her and Nia just start. Man, these were like the outrunners here, just the power twins. And they even hit a super collider onto Naomi and Sky, which it was identified as such. Ninth is Rhea Ripley. Do you want to describe Rhea Ripley's mask? This was quite the upgrade from the just facial protection mask. This was like the Undertaker's Phantom of the Opera mask gone wild.
Rhea has had this sort of like goat skull, like a goat with like four different horns, I guess, a ram's horn, and then like a regular set of horns too. I mean, it looked incredibly cool. Honestly, it looked like she might be related to a member of the House of Black, is what it looked like.
Do you think that we could have fans leaving with not just their X-ray t-shirts for Rhea, but now buying these masks?
I mean, I don't know if they'd be selling these. If they were, I think it'd probably cost quite a bit.
I like to believe that nothing gets worn that they're not willing to part with in grand volume with. This is probably a $80 mask they'll start selling.
Oh, more than that. I mean, it could look great. Look great.
So Ripley gets a table, and she just rams it into Raquel's face as she enters. A lot of intensity from Rhea. Naomi went for a double rear view off the top rope to Nia and Raquel. I had no idea what this was supposed to be until Michael Cole identified it as such. Then the heels get whipped with the toilet seat. In a cool spot, Bailey takes Belair's braid and starts using it as a weapon. I hope she has permission for this. And then it's Rhea beating down everyone, and she is the last one standing as the clock ticks zero and Liv Morgan is last. But Liv is looking fearful, goes to the back, and returns with the baseball bat that was used in storyline to take out Rhea on NXT weeks ago. So Liv comes in, and she just starts going to town with this baseball bat after Ripley removes her mask. It's like, come for the orbital. And the Riptide gets stopped, and they stomp Ripley, and this is where they hold Ripley, and Liv just starts attacking her with baseball shots to the body and back. And we got this great series of spots where each person gets laid out with a variety of strikes, suplexes. Bailey sends Liv into the corner, and then Jax hits a Samoan drop to Bailey for a two count, which is the first pinfall attempt of the match. Sky climbs up to get her trash can that's been left on this platform, while Tiffany climbs on the other end of the cage onto another platform, and simultaneously, Io does her moonsault with the trash can, while Stratton delivers a swanton off the other side, and we had groups there to catch each one. Tough spot to shoot, but they went to this shot that you can see on the screen, so they were both executing these at the same time.
It was a tough spot to time because, I mean,
would you have spaced these?
Well, there's a great element of danger to both of these spots, especially with Io's when she's doing something like this pretty blind. But timing is really difficult on the part of Tiffany Stratton, who had to get up there and essentially wait for Io to do it. It wasn't just her that had to wait. It was everybody below them that had to kind of awkwardly stand there frozen, waiting for these people to dive on them. And
it's on Tiffany to get the timing that like she has to follow suit with Io.
Considering all of those sort of moving parts, I think they did the best they could. Like, by the end of it, all we're going to remember is the spot and how it looked. We're not going to remember maybe the awkwardness that led up to it. And in that sense, I thought it was totally worth it. You know, it was probably the highlight of the match.
It probably got the biggest reaction of the match as well. And like Io, like rotated herself, like pretty much landed on her feet coming down
perfect,
as well.
Perfect.
So size. It looked like, you know, hit it as well as you could with this like blind moonsault off the top, which is like absolutely nuts, no matter how many times we've seen Io do this. Stratton, then, I could not believe this way. Like, Nostradamus here, below our screen here, pulls out the briefcase from under the trash can, and the crowd goes nuts. Now, the second you... this makes no sense how this can work within the body of this match, but you do have a prone Liv and Nia from the previous dive. So they tease it, but then Raquel is screaming at Stratton, and it doesn't matter. She gets cut off, but it does get the easy pop because you're always going to get a pop for this briefcase. I'm glad they didn't try to do this cash in because I think it would have been so illogical.
Yeah. I mean, something like the briefcase continues to maybe offer opportunities for really confusing booking that I just don't see. You know, if you have creative control over this gimmick, you would never want to entertain because it just, why confuse the audience? But it does continue to tell us what Stratton's main storyline is, and that's her holding the briefcase, constantly being a threat to her partner, Nia Jax.
Jax starts whipping Belair around with her own braid as she gets back to her feet. The Annihilator is stopped, and Belair and Naomi powerbomb Jax through a table. Liv makes a save using the bat, and a Riptide is stopped by Raquel, who has been handcuffed after a fire extinguisher was used, and when the smoke clears, she's handcuffed. So there's a code breaker with a chair to Ripley by Liv, and then an Oblivion off the top turnbuckle is blocked by Ripley, who manages a Riptide to Liv off the top turnbuckle and through a table with Ripley pinning Liv Morgan at 38 minutes and 15 seconds as the babyface team prevails, and Ripley looks very dominant. I thought she was booked very strong and was very effective in this match. And I thought overall it was a very good match. And I thought Io was like the standout. I thought the match really escalated when she got in there. But there was a lot of intensity down the stretch. It did have its problems from some of the timing issues and some of the early weapon spots. It had its issues. But overall, it was a pretty crowd-pleasing match. The double dives were probably the high point from a crowd spectator point of view, and you come out of this with a very clear direction of Rhea Ripley going for Liv. So I thought it was a very straightforward War Games match that was effective in its booking.
Yeah, I overall enjoyed the match, as I usually enjoy War Games matches. You know, I think there's always just enough interesting things going on, enough star power most of the time for these matches to be successful and to receive great reactions from the crowd. But I did think this particular War Games was pretty clunky early on, in particular when it was just Nia wrestling in there. And it's not only on Nia. It's with, you know, it's on everybody else that was sort of in there with her as well. I think I'd be critical of the decision to give the baby faces the advantage for this match.
I hated that in this. I feel it's just with the two War Games, they feel they have to be different. And if you watch the way they always had the baby faces selling, even when they had the numbers advantage. So it was just, I hate that they do it. It's so clear that this match works the other way. And I think they just want the two to be distinct, and that's how they do it. I completely agree with you.
I thought it made for a totally unnecessary handicap to the match. You know, they, like you said, John, they ended up giving the heels control most of the times anyway, which made things a little bit ridiculous when it was the faces up in a 5-on-4 advantage, yet they were all laying down. So it kind of made the faces look either extra weak or just kind of hard to believe in general. So, I mean, I don't think they need to be so cute with it in the future. Just have the heels, you know, or script the match slightly differently, but you know, we know what works best for War Games. Like I said, I think ultimately what we remember from these sort of matches is the big spots, and despite how maybe awkward some of the waiting around was, the highlights are going to be what we remember out of this match, and they looked really good. You know, I really like the sleight of hand handcuffing of Raquel Gonzalez with the fire extinguisher, and once the smoke cleared, you see her getting handcuffed. I thought that was done
they
really
did
well.
That very quick.
I like the cash and tease. And, you know, as far as like drawing attention to the relationships between some of these characters, like Bailey with Io and Bailey with Bianca, there was some material there, not necessarily enough material to like resolve anything, but they at least, you know, did their acknowledging of it. So, listening to the reaction alone, very successful match. I didn't love all of the execution of it, but, you know, got a great reaction.
Yeah. And I will say this, that going in, like you could, and I thought that they would somewhat lean on this, is that you do have your, like, for lack of a better term, your weak links in both of these War Games matches that you could imagine taking the pin. Instead, they had like main people taking these pinfalls for maximum impact and for a purpose. With Liv Morgan losing, there was a reason for it. And as we'll talk about in the main event, like they certainly did not lean on like a Tonga Loa or, in this case, like Candice LeRae, who's just the least established of like your players in the women's division.
Team captains took the pin and did the pinning. So, I mean, when you're looking to when you're looking to build directly to the matches that are supposed to follow out of this, that really is, I think, the best decision.
Where do you see this Rhea Ripley Liv Morgan match happening? I would think like Saturday night's main event is very soon. You have 2 weeks. The other big one is this Netflix debut that I could see them loading up that show.
That feels like a big one. You know, Rumble at this point is also a possibility in February. I don't see these two making it all the way to Mania. So
I think even Rumble's long to hold this one off for. You could do Raquel in the meantime before you get to Liv. But based on this finish, you have to get there pretty soon, I would think. Yep. And maybe January 6th is the best place. Like, you really want to load that is the biggest show that they have coming up.
How do you feel when you switch to Geico and save on your car insurance? It's like going to work on one Thursday morning and thinking to yourself, just one more day until Friday. But then somebody in the elevator says, "Happy Friday!" Then you check your phone quickly and discover today is actually Friday. So yes, happy Friday, random stranger in the elevator. Happy Friday indeed. Yep, switching and saving with Geico feels just like that. Get more with Geico.
Coming up December on the Post Wrestling Cafe, two editions of Rewind Away coming your way, including Dave Bautista starting in the M. Night Shyamalan horror film Knock at the Cabin. Plus, we will review Noah's Departure Card from 2004 featuring Kenta Kobashi and Jun Akiyama. Plus, reviews of ROH Final Battle, Strong Style Evolved, and the granddaddy of them all, the best and worst of show for 2024 with Braden Harrington, Davey Portman, Wei Ting, and yours truly. PostWrestlingCafe.com. LA Knight and Shinsuke Nakamura was the second match for the U.S. Championship. Now, did Nakamura have a newer theme here? This was a remix of the remix.
He did, yeah. So he debuted with a new theme on Friday, which I thought was excellent.
I like Fridays more than tonight's.
And tonight he showed up with not just a new version of the song, but also like a even
mask?
newer look, like wearing this sort of like what is it, samurai, mm-hmm. you know, mask and gear
with the Japanese flag over top. For the entrance.
Like looked incredibly cool. Music didn't sound as cool, and I mean, that could either signify that it's like what, a pay-per-view exclusive entrance, or it could be a permanent change, because the new theme is such a banger. And they, I mean, already last night people were like singing along to the song. Like it might be too baby face friendly. So I mean, if that's the reason for the change, I can totally understand.
Well, they heard your thoughts on the song, so. ruined a great thing going for him. So he came in with an even newer theme here. LA Knight got a pretty big babyface response coming out, and he's aggressive at the beginning, and even hits a very safe version of the burning hammer. I mean, not dropping him on his neck. And then Knight leaps to the top and he slips. And the story Cole is telling is that Knight is off of his game tonight. Like, Nakamura's in his head and Knight is not putting his he's not on his game tonight. So Knight gets thrown off the top of the suplex as he's rotated, and then as Nakamura sets up for the Kinshasa, Knight sidesteps, landing a suplex of his own, hits the top rope elbow, and they end up fighting between the two rings, and Nakamura thumbs him in the eye and hits an inverted DDT onto the steel platform, and with Knight selling the DDT, he is prone for the Kinshasa to the back of the neck, and Nakamura pins Knight in 9 minutes and 40 seconds, winning the United States Championship. As Cole reiterates, writes that he is in Knight's head and he was dominated tonight. So they kind of went with the story that we were talking about on the preview. I wouldn't say this was as one-sided as like Cole's indication was, but that is sort of the story they are telling here. And for this new character, this probably was the finish that gives it the legs to continue forward. I will say, though, I thought this was the weakest match on the show.
Yeah. I don't know if this match, like, in order for this to be a good match, I think it would have had to been a lot longer and maybe a bit more 50-50, and that's not really the type of match that you'd want. I would say this was more like, maybe 70-30 Nakamura, you know, just maybe given like how quick the victory was for a character on Knight's level. But it was the right decision. You know, it seemed to be a title change that maybe caught some in the crowd off guard. I think that's only because, you know, Knight is a big character. Nakamura is only a recent debut. We haven't necessarily seen him be established at a certain level, but this is the type of win you need to give him, like the type of shock victory you need to give somebody like him in order to establish him at a certain level. Judging by like the work they put into like Nakamura's entrance and the fact that he's like two different entrance themes now, I mean, I don't think they were going to extinguish this in like a quick, you know, LA Knight win. They clearly are investing a lot in this Shinsuke Nakamura like return, and doing this, giving him the quick championship win is, I think, a great way of doing it. So it'll make Knight a lot more interesting having him chase it back. I hope he gets into a lot more of that storyline material that Nakamura introduced, talking about his insecurities. And we never really got a chance to get there because this cycle was so quick. But now hopefully we get a chance to see what an LA Knight under pressure looks like.
Yeah, and it is interesting that you're putting a title on Nakamura, who is going over for that Noah show in about a month's time to take on Yulka Sasaki. And while I didn't think Nakamura was going to be losing that match, it does kind of add that he'll probably have a title going over there.
Yeah, sure. Why not? You know, like what a way to establish the U.S. championship, I guess, by maybe giving
defending it in Japan
an international win. Yeah, I guess.
Oh, okay. I'm not going to make it a habit. I don't feel it is our need to have to recap ads and commercials. Mm-hmm. But we did have Alpha Academy promoting the True Classic t-shirts that Otis was trying on. And I guess the takeaway from the Netflix broadcast 2 weeks ago was Mike Tyson's ass. And that's how they worked that in with Otis walking off with his bare ass that was censored.
I don't know the Mike Tyson reference.
This is when Mike Tyson was interviewed in the locker room, and the camera stays on him as he turned around, and it's like his bare ass is right there.
I see. Okay.
Yeah. I'm surprised you missed this. It was the highlight, I would say, of everything Tyson Paul related on that show. Yeah, this this was great. Didn't this make you want to buy these t-shirts?
I mean, it did the job of telling me what these t-shirts even are. So, I mean, in that sense, I guess it was successful.
UFC welterweight champion Bilal Muhammad was shown in the crowd, a good pal of one Phil Brooks. And Bron Breakker, Sheamus, and Ludwig Kaiser followed that for the Intercontinental title. Michael Cole expecting this to be one of the most physical matches of the year. And Kaiser goes to the floor right away as Bron then clotheslines him after running the ropes after Kaiser got a chair. And later the chair is placed in the corner and would just sit there. Bron goes for his run around the ring, but gets cut off with a baseball slide drop kick from Kaiser. And he follows by drop kicking Sheamus into the steps. And Breakker flies into the shot. And with this flying shoulder tackle and the way he leaped into the shot, it looked incredible as Michael Cole screams, like a damn missile. He was so impressed with this. The crowd is chanting for Sheamus. Breakker stops covering him as he goes for push-ups, and Graves noting he's paying homage to Scott Steiner. I think in Canada, are you for sure, Corey, that's who he's paying tribute to? I don't know.
I will always associate Mark the Machine Hominick with those questions.
I am sure that's who Bron Breakker was given the shout out to. Kaiser grabs the shillelagh of Sheamus, but gets stopped, and Kaiser's then into the timekeeper's area, and then he stares down Bron. Sheamus doesn't need the shillelagh. As he enters, we have the Fry Takayama exchange between Bron and Sheamus, and then the Celtic cross to Bron is hit, but he kicks out. Braun comes back with the Breakensteiner, misses a spear going into the chair that had been lodged in the corner all this time. And after he spears the chair, he is hit with a brogue kick. And this was the big near fall of the match, where Sheamus has the match won and Kaiser from the floor yanks out referee Eddie Arango. Crowd is livid that Sheamus had this match won, and the match must continue. Kaiser attacks Sheamus and brutalizes him with this shillelagh. He's got marks all over him, and Sheamus then catches him with the kneecapper for a near fall, and then Kaiser further attacks the ribs of Sheamus and hits his DDT. Breaker returns, spears Kaiser, and then spears Sheamus in his injured ribs, and Breaker pins Sheamus in 14 minutes and 25 seconds of a very intense match that I think lived up to its billing.
Really, really excellent match. I mean, I think great match planning, great execution, and incredible crowd reactions to really kind of like match it. To me, this is like certainly the most over Sheamus has ever been as a babyface. I think he plays the old legend character really well. Like all the taunting from Braun obviously is making all the old people in the crowd identify a lot more with Sheamus. You know, we still have plenty left in the tank. Okay, 40 is not that old. I think they've done a great job of building Sheamus's quest for this IC title to the point now where
he should win it at some point
to close his career. Okay, because I think him winning the IC title is a way bigger story than him winning the world championship, any of the world championships. So they've really kind of made the IC title feel like a valuable commodity, in particular for Sheamus, for that reason. So I almost hope he never wins it again until the very last portion of his career, because that is his story. So he garnered some incredible reactions in this match. It essentially, like, they structured the match around Sheamus, you know, as the lone babyface. They had a great pairing between him and Breaker, then with Kaiser. Braun Breaker, though, looked absolutely amazing in this match. You know, his explosiveness was really well showcased, like that shoulder tackle on the floor, then the spears. All three of the men, I think, were showcased really well in this sort of like mid-card division.
I just think Braun is going to be such a major force next year. I just think he just checks everything at this moment. He's so fun to watch. His character has, like, that heel turn in NXT, I think, did him so well. Even the tag team with Baron Corbin, like, I think they really got the most out of this guy, who just has, like, he has taken to the, like, he had a handful of matches when he started in NXT and has been, like, everything thrown his way. This guy is just that and then some. Like, where this guy will be in a year, assuming he doesn't have some crazy injury, which I would lay off those running into the desk spots like we saw on Monday. Like, let's not tempt fate with ourselves, because this guy is it's part of the appeal of him, is to, he's an incredible, incredible athlete. And if he stays healthy, this is going to be one of their biggest stars for the next decade plus.
I've just been impressed at how different and how much better he feels than his NXT, you know, incarnation. So he's way more of a top guy, in my opinion, now than he was even back then.
This was interesting. So they're plugging next weekend's Deadline show, and if you notice, both in the ad here and how Michael Cole identified it, as well as on the website, they are now branding next weekend's event as WWE Deadline instead of NXT Deadline. And I wonder if that is at least going to be for the premium live events, how they start promoting these and putting the stronger brand attached to it.
Very fascinating. Yeah. I guess, like, does it tell you something about the way they view NXT no longer really as its own, I don't know, like, promotion or sub promotion, but just like another brand, the way like a Raw and a SmackDown are?
I think that's part of the thinking. I'm sure a lot of it too is similar to when, this is like a really dated reference, but when WEC was running and they had these awesome shows, like, they were some of the best MMA cards. But the thought was, like, it was just, there's a certain ceiling to the letters WEC, and it's honestly what even Tony Khan was speaking about Ring of Honor, and if they should, like, AEW presents Ring of Honor. Like, you have the stronger brand, and why not attach that? Like, a WWE Deadline is going to have more just wider appeal. It's the stronger brand attached to it, and that's probably what they're playing with.
I also wonder if there are just maybe things about like a search engine type of, usefulness of having a WWE branded PLE event versus NXT branded PLE event, especially when you're talking about these shows outside of the US moving all into Netflix, you know.
I'm sure Mark Shapiro had a long talking to about SEO is so key. It's, yeah. I mean, first of all, this guy, he had two mats to do you think Prime had to spend for both rings that they got their logo in tonight?
Probably not. Probably a two-for-one deal, this one. But in the future, they could have two ring-centered logos, Prime sponsorships, I'm sure. Yeah.
I think we're going to have three ring events on a regular basis. Yeah. I think that this is the time.
Yeah.
And we're going to jack up floor seats to make up for the lost revenue. Oh. Gunther against Damian Priest, second from the top for the World Heavyweight Championship. And Gunther gets sent to the floor early on, and he has to regroup. And he's impressed early as he gives a smile to Priest. And almost from the get-go, Damian Priest has a shoulder issue. And the referee starts checking on him. And the whole story of the match is Priest having to overcome this shoulder injury that Gunther is like a shark going after this arm when he smells blood, runs it into the post, hyperextends the arms, placing pressure, and Priest is screaming, fighting to his feet, and Priest stops a powerbomb, but on his first of multiple attempts can't lift Gunther for the razor's edge. So instead, Damian Priest, our new Brazilian jiu-jitsu ace, applies one of the wackiest looking triangles I've ever seen. This was like the go-go triangle.
Well, yeah, I would suggest this is more of a go-go plata, or maybe like his homage to The Undertaker's Hell's Gate, more than a triangle.
Well, yeah. I could go either way based on his foot positioning here. I mean, it was this was some submission, I will say that. But hey, to his credit, this got a reaction when he went for this. Like that Hell's Gate is in people's memory bank for eternity. So I like the idea. Like here, my arm's out and I have to transfer my game from a power one to a submission game. And so he ends up going for this, and he gets to his feet, and he tries again lifting for the razor's edge, but the arm gives out. So Gunther goes to a choke and then turns it into a powerbomb. Priest manages a Frankensteiner off the top, and then on his third attempt hits the razor's edge. He crawls on top, only getting a two count. So the straps come down. South of Heaven gets countered, and the second attempt at South of Heaven is thwarted. The arm is dead. So Gunther locks on a Kimura, and Priest fights and fights, getting to the rope, lands a rebound lariat, and then Priest is knocked off balance on the turnbuckle, and Gunther's superplex gets blocked. Both men fall, including Priest, who lands on the floor, and the referee is going to check on Priest. Priest is telling him, just give me a second. So the ref goes in. He said,
it's out, it's out.
It's out. It's out.
The second time just brought back great memories of Samoa Joe.
Samoa Joe's finest call of all time. So the referee gives him a second. In fact, he gives him several seconds because he goes to check on Gunther, and there Finn Balor pops up and lands the coup de grace off the steps to the injured Priest. The only little thing I wish he did, I wish he stomped the shoulder. I think that would have been like a nice little
touch. Did he not jump on the arm? I thought he made
I watched the replay.
Injury.
It was more chest, but it was regardless. It's the finisher. And Gunther sees this and he takes out Finn Balor, which was an interesting spot, and rolls Priest in, power bombs him, and man, did he power bomb this guy. I mean, goddamn, this guy probably got whiplash coming down. Elbows him and then just torques the arm, applying a choke, and Priest goes out. He does not submit. He goes out at 19 minutes and 20 seconds. And I thought this was a great match that they had. I thought this was one of Damian Priest's better performances, where it was him having to sell for 20 minutes. And I would not, if you had told me this was the plan for the match, I don't know how this one would have gone, but I thought both were really great. I like the fact that you had Gunther, who is still sort of here as someone that he still is willing to take out Finn Balor. He doesn't want the help, but he is not going to be stupid here. He's going to capitalize on this and wins the match. I just thought they told a very good story, and it was like a really well done championship type of match, and Gunther gets the win.
I find Gunther pretty interesting in that, I mean, he's clearly a heel, but he still operates in this like sort of a gray area as a heel, where even though he's opposing all of our favorite baby faces, he still has a certain nobility about him, and he's somebody who wants to earn his own victories. And for that reason, I think you can constantly flirt with turning him as a babyface at any moment, like maybe some of us thought at the end of the Cody match, you know, with the handshake, maybe that was a sign of something to come in the future. But clearly, for the time being, still works really well as a heel, and maybe he'll stick as a heel for a little bit longer while still showing these occasional glimpses. I thought this was a really excellent match. It gave you the usual Gunther intensity, where every move looked perfect and I think as real as possible. I agree. I thought this was one of the best performances I've seen Damian Priest give. You know, as a babyface, I think it's unlocked a lot more sort of range, I think, in his performances, which I find fascinating. His selling has been excellent. You could feel the pain in all of his arm movements. He did a great job of that, showed a lot of good ability in general in the match. The only thing that I think marred this from like being maybe a more well-remembered match or more talked about match in the future, I think, is unfortunately the dirty finish, which I mean, is understandable and totally necessary, because they need to get to Balor versus Priest again, I guess.
Do they?
Yeah, I don't know, but it's a long term program. They needed an out for Priest to protect him, but you know, I would have loved a clean finish. You know, at some point.
Yeah. It's like, you obviously see where this one is going. It's. Yeah, I just felt like we kind of got that blow off at Bad Blood, so now we're going to do the second blow off between these two, probably with some stipulation, you would think, at this point, to really be the sign off to these two.
Yeah. Support for this post-wrestling podcast comes from those of you who have picked up our merch over at Chopped Tees. T-shirts, hoodies, sweatshirts, and hats from post-wrestling and our network of shows, including the NWA Podcast, Poison Rana, The Long and Winding Royal Road, WrestleNomics, and MC Later. Free shipping to almost anywhere in the entire world. No minimum spend required. That's chopped-tees.com/post-wrestling.
All right, well then, all of a sudden, folks, it's time for the main event. I mean, this was a show that was going by. I mean, it was still a 3.5-hour show, but I cannot say there was...
Didn't feel like there was that much downtime. I mean, you had a lot of time for entrances, which I think, you know, people kind of show up for. They want to see that spectacle. But, like, you didn't really have a ton of, like, unnecessary video packages or things like that.
They didn't have one of those non-wrestling segments where they brought somebody out or anything like that. There was... And a show that, I mean, it didn't have a lot... Like, a show without Cody Rhodes, without Seth Rollins, without Kevin Owens. I mean, they did this without a lot of big stars as well. But obviously, you were building everything towards this main event, the men's War Games match with Roman Reigns, CM Punk, Sami Zayn, and the Usos against Solo Sikoa, Jacob Fatu, Tama Tonga, Tonga Loa, and Bronson Reed. And we had...
What was up with these opening videos?
I didn't know what this was. I didn't know if this was a reference to something. You had each one like with a green screen and like what, like either their catchphrase or their team. I didn't put too much thought into this, but we had all 10 people individually address us before this.
So I don't know if this was like either a play on like a prior classic War Games or Survivor Series type of video or something, like maybe related to college football or NFL or something. But like, yeah, they had these individual videos. And in concept, I really like the idea, you know, hearing from everybody talking about like who they are. But like,
who is this punk fella?
But it was really strange in that they had each person be introduced talking about what college or university that they're representing. And for the most part, everybody had like a made up university. Like it was like Jey Uso, first round draft pick on Raw, representing Yeet University. And then like, it was like Sami Zayn saying like, Sami Zayn representing the Uso Penitentiary. You had Tama Tonga, which I thought was maybe the funniest one. He's like, Tama Tonga representing University or whatever he does. But then true to the character, Tonga Loa says, Tonga Loa. University of Texas from El Paso. Like, did this guy not get the memo? You're supposed to make up like a kayfabe, you know, university. Like,
imagine this was all a rib on Tongaloa. Like, they told all, we're just gonna fuck with him. Okay, it's just, you'll see it when it airs. It'll be funny, we promise.
Yeah, the people in the chat are saying it's like a Monday Night Football reference. I thought it was kind of awkward, but I also kind of loved it at the same time. So there you
all
go.
For Tongaloa. Yes. So we had all of the new bloodline come out together for just one entrance. Like, let's be brisk here. And then we spent like, you know, 10 minutes here on the entrances for the other team. And they were trying to read into, what does this mean that they're not coming out together? And Punk walks out and he just walks over to the cage and he pie faces Bronson Reed. And Cole's like, oh, Punk, always causing controversy. And
this
was a
place.
Dick move. I mean, the guy's defenseless, locked up in this cage. This guy just walks up and just wallops him in the face.
Well, at least this one took place in front of the stage and not in the gorilla position.
Yeah, well, I mean, at least, you know, at the previous one, the guy could have defended himself, unlike this. But it was caught on camera, and we did see. I don't think this will be air. The interplay here in the cage between Reigns and Punk was hilarious. Like, excellent. they went from, like, anger to, like, old married couple. Like, they had, the memes that will come out of these two are probably going to get you plenty of online humor.
Months. It honestly is really incredible how they managed to suddenly like build this Punk and Reigns feud into such a hot program in 2 weeks' time. Like, essentially, what are we talking about here? 9 days? Like, is that the totality of like 8 days of having Punk and Reigns actually interact? In that time, they've done such a great ability to tell the story, and so much of it without even using words. Now, I love this in particular because they managed to use even the entrance as a storytelling vehicle. You know, the Punk and Reigns simply sharing a cage told you a whole lot about the story between the two.
Jay was the last one to make his entrance, so he did his big entrance through the crowd, and we're starting things off with Tama Tonga and Jay Uso. Tama Tonga is the first to enter the structure, and dude goes Spider-Man, like, right around the perimeter of this thing, and Michael Cole notes, you know, if someone could have done that in the Punjabi prison, maybe we would have kept that match around. And
oh my.
Michael Cole, you've never heard a man laugh so hard at his own joke. He thought this was the best. Then the bell rings, and Jay and Tama Tonga, I don't want to be like glib here, like, did almost nothing here for 5 minutes. It was 90 seconds before they even touched. This was, I'll be nice and say they were laying the foundation. Okay, that's what they did for these 5 minutes. It was almost nothing.
It felt like a pretty long 5 minutes.
And it was.
I mean, I think Tama Tonga in general has been doing incredibly well. You know, I'm loving the hyena stuff. I find it very entertaining. They do have sort of like a stable style, though, where it's like, you do some attacking, do a lot of playing to the crowd, but ultimately you're not doing a whole lot of like action. And for these 5 minutes, including the unfortunate part where he went for the cover instinctively, maybe not the most entertaining part of the match.
Well, third is Bronson Reed, who comes in and he goes for the chairs. And Jay, the first chair, dude, he just whips it at this guy. Ooh. With all the force in the world. He follows with more chairs. The last one Reed swats down might have just been legit, like, cool it. And they double team Jay throughout the period. And in this match, the heels do have the numbers advantage. And that was kind of the story of this whole, before the official match begins. Fourth is Jimmy Uso, who comes out, and it was a breath of fresh air. No weapons. He is not going underneath the ring. He just enters and attacks both. Because the backdrop here was, it's an Usos tag match for 3 minutes against Bronson Reed and Tama Tonga. And the highlight of this was Jimmy going to the top turnbuckle, and dude hit a whisper in the wind. No one looked more surprised that he landed this than Jimmy Uso, with the look on his face after landing this after all these years, and then helps his brother to his feet. Fine 3 minute period.
I mean, none of us ever felt like, somebody of Jimmy Uso's athleticism wasn't capable of pulling something like this off, but he never did in any of his prior matches. It looked incredibly clean. I did feel like there was an a bit of an effort to, you know, make like push Jimmy Uso up to perhaps the star power of
outside of Bronson Reed. He had like pretty much the most ambitious stunt of the match.
Yes.
Jacob Fatu is fifth, and Tonga Loa was all ready to enter when Sokoa stops him, sending Fatu instead. And Jacob Fatu, just hands down, he was awesome in this match. Yeah. He comes in and just immediately hits a pop-up Samoan by Jay, enough to inspire Corey Graves to quote Sun Tzu, "Victorious warriors win first and then go to war, while defeated warriors go to war first and then seek to win." Can always use some Sun Tzu in our war games analogies. They triple team Jay. They just dominate this period. Then we go to the clock counting down, and Punk is ready to come out. Reigns puts his arm up, blocking Punk, signaling for Zayn to enter instead. So it's Reigns and Punk left in the cage. I'm awaiting next year when the week of Survivor Series, they're going to release a YouTube exclusive where they're both mic'd and just talking shit to one another as they wait during these 20 minutes in this cage.
They can give us a whole documentary on CM Punk and Roman Reigns sharing a shark cage together. They're fantastic. Again, so much of the story is already being told just with the two of them waiting around inside a phone booth together. How awkward of a moment is that?
This is me and Brandon from New Jersey.
Pretty much, yeah.
The crowd is singing Olé for Sami Zayn, who, am I mistaken, was he the only Canadian on this show?
I think we would have heard if he wasn't. So, yeah, I think you're right.
So Fatu catches Zayn, and he gets saved by a Jimmy superkick, and then they do their handshake and hug. The crowd's chanting Usi. So Zayn is working with the Usos. Fatu goes for an impaler DDT on Jimmy. This one did not go so smooth. This was a blemish for Jacob here. Seventh is Tonga Loa, who comes out. He gets a pair of tables while the crowd chants for CM Punk. Zayn then does this incredible sell for a snake eyes. You've never seen someone take a snake eyes like this. Fatu does the double springboard into a split-legged moonsault on Jay as the new bloodline continue to dominate with the numbers advantage. Eighth in is CM Punk when Reigns is about to leave the cage, and now Punk just shoulders past him and enters, infuriating Roman Reigns, who has got to wait. So Punk goes underneath the ring. He grabs the toolbox that is a callback to the Hell in a Cell match with Drew McIntyre, who they know we still haven't seen since the attack of the toolbox. And Punk just beat the hell out of these guys with this goddamn toolbox. And I don't think he ever took any tools out of this toolbox.
No, he did not. No, it's the toolbox itself that's the big weapon, you know. And what's inside the actual toolbox, I mean, we can only assume.
That's another mysterious key that was not procured.
It might have been coins, you know, just to maximize the sound of it without actually making it more heavy.
Well, Jacob Fatu takes a bulldog onto this toolbox, and he just pops up from the toolbox and hits Punk with this pop-up Samoan that was just great. Mm-hmm. Ninth is Solo Sikoa, and he comes in, slams the door onto Zayn, Jay, and Jimmy. So take that, Michael Hayes, and grabs a chain, and Jay is placed on top of Jimmy as Fatu lands a moonsault onto both of them, and then Reed hits a tsunami onto Sami Zayn. Punk then slaps Sikoa, and they maul Punk, all four of them. Sikoa then chains the door shut, telling Roman he's not getting in. So the last entrant, Roman Reigns, comes down. He can't open the door, and thus he has to climb over the fence to get in. And this man fights all five new Bloodline members by himself before the others are managing to get to their feet and back up Roman, and we get a face-off between Reigns and Punk when Paul Heyman appears and tells them to work together. This is War Games, and we get the match beyond. And there's a spot where they did this one on television, so they tried it again, the spot where Roman ducks the Samoan spike, and he's going to go for the spear while Punk is going for a GTS to Fatu. And I'll just say that this one was the timing was not pretty on this one. And it just looked really clunky. And I feel like even the crowd saw this, because the idea of Reigns spearing Punk, you would have thought this would have like tore the house down, this spot. And it really didn't. It just felt like very awkward. The announcers even had to note that Reigns had to readjust his footing and reset. And it just was too contrived, I thought, for you could see what they were doing, and just a couple seconds off can make a big difference, I thought.
I thought, if you're simply watching it and maybe not paying super attention, close attention to it, not like maybe making use of the replays, I thought it looked about as good as
the replay did not look as bad when they showed the replay. It was in real time that it just felt like very, like almost like you hit pause mid sequence.
Pretty high degree of difficulty, I would say, with the timing of this. And again, all the gears, you know, moving around here.
So Fatu goes for a moonsault to Punk and misses him, injuring his knee. And this guy just limped throughout the rest of the match. Reigns fights back, spearing Sokoa.
So this injury, I don't know if they mentioned anything at the presser, but did you consider whether or not this was legitimate or...
The fact that they went after the knee, I mean, my apprehension was just that, or my thought was that it was just selling. But we've seen other instances of this guy where
the selling was really good then, if that's the case. I mean, we'll find out.
He was really limping here.
I'm sure like plenty of you maybe even watching the press conference will have maybe some clarity on it. But
he's also a character that I wouldn't even think that they would give like some update on in that regard. But
it was one of the more dramatic parts of the match, I thought, you know, seeing like how Jacob Fatu would act after this injury. So
he's limping. Then Reigns low blows Fatu and spears Sokoa, and Reigns gets placed on the table by Bronson Reed, and Reed climbs up to the top platform. So you knew that they were going to do the tsunami spot. And my God, did this look insane as he was standing on this platform, just this gigantic individual who's probably in the 350 range, and he jumps up. Now the timing wasn't great earlier on for the miscommunication spear spot. The timing on Punk's save here was incredible.
Excellent.
He comes over, and it's like this spot, there's so much that could go wrong that you aren't even going to fault if someone is too early to make the save, because if it goes wrong, it's really bad. They couldn't have done this. It was like Reed was taking off flight as Punk dives into the shot. Like, you don't even see him. And then he rescues Reigns. And this is the spot where he gains Roman's trust and pulls Punk up by the hand. I thought this was timed so well. And this is the beginning of the fall of the new bloodline and basically the elimination of Bronson, who is dead after this insane tsunami through the table, missing Reigns.
Yeah, we knew the tsunami from Reed was going to be used as a big spot. I didn't think it would be used as a storyline point, you know, beyond just, I think, it being an impressive stunt. Instead, they used it as the reason why Roman and Punk actually trust each other now. Having Punk save Roman from this, despite Roman behaving the way he has towards Punk, was the incident that helped Roman's heart grow three times.
He helps up Punk. They are now willing to be on the same page for one night only. But Fatu attacks. He hits a pair of Samoan spikes, but then the Usos take him out with double super kicks. They hit a 1D to Fatu for a huge pop. And then Jimmy climbs to the top of the cage as Fatu is placed on the table. Now, they had to go through these other sequences leading to a blue thunderbomb, so Fatu had to lie here for quite a bit. But then Jimmy hits the Uso splash. That takes out Fatu, and he's gone. Jay goes to his partners, let's finish this shit. And everyone is down except for Solo, as the OG bloodline surrounds Solo and each one takes him out. We get super kicks from the Usos, the Huluva kick, a GTS, and then the punctuation mark, the spear, as Roman pins Sokoa in 41 minutes and 56 seconds to win the War Games. The four embrace one by one. They go over to thank Punk as Reigns looks on. And then Reigns offers his hand to Punk, who accepts it as Heyman smiles, looking on from outside of the cage. And the five do their Avengers pose with the four ones in the air and Punk with his go to sleep sign as Heyman looks on. And Cole does make note that they have won the match, but Solo Sikoa still wears the Ulafala and is the tribal chief. So there is still that outstanding issue to do a Reigns Solo Sikoa match, which I think they wrap up sooner than later. And again, I think January 6th is another potential for that one. I don't know how much longer you want to go with those two.
So I'm not necessarily that excited by the prospect of Roman Reigns versus Solo Sikoa at this point.
I don't think most are, but I think it's one you have to do the match.
But I think Reigns finally claiming the Ulafala is like the big thing at the end of this year's story for Roman Reigns. So I would have him face Solo, and just as he's defeated Solo,
he leaves it in his will to Jacob Fatu. Oh,
I think The Rock should come in.
Okay.
At some point. And The Rock should be the one with the Ulafala. And that's how we get to our WrestleMania program, because I don't think Reigns should have that. His story shouldn't be complete until we get to WrestleMania. Back to the match. I thought this was an excellent, excellent War Games match. You know, at the beginning of the pay-per-view cycle, if you told me that somehow this would have ended up being like a backdrop for the relationship between Roman Reigns and CM Punk, I think I wouldn't have necessarily believed it, but it's what it became, and I thought they did a great job of giving us so much like interesting material between the interplay of CM Punk and Roman Reigns, from using the entrances to tell the story to the great little arc that they created with Roman, like using the visual device of helping up every single person on his team up, with the exception of CM Punk, until the point where Punk finally earns Reigns' trust, and at that point Reigns shows it by being willing to lift Punk up. I thought that was all really brilliantly done. I think this match like gave me a lot of respect for all the guys in the new bloodline. Solo Sikoa, I think we said, you know, plenty about. He takes center stage really just without even, like, it feels so natural for him too, because he just has unbelievable charisma. If that injury was mostly selling, he did a fantastic job of it. I thought the Tongans did really well for their role. You know, the Usos versus the Tongans suddenly is a match I'm actually quite interested in. And I think Solo, maybe even if he's not necessarily on a Roman Reigns level, I think he's really shown advancement in terms of like his charisma, his ability to feel like a genuine leader of this new stable. So, and the addition of Bronson Reed, I think, just really completes the group. So I hope Reed gets to stick around this entire thing.
After they finished all of this, they're each exiting the cage one by one, and Punk comes, he hugs Heyman, and they've got the camera right there as he thanks Paul, and Punk says, "When I need that favor, I'm coming to ask for it," and Heyman tells him, "It's yours," and then Reigns is the last one out, and he just kind of puts his hand on the cheek of Heyman. They are helping Jimmy to the back, and coming from Neil Flanagan, who was monitoring the press conference, Jay mentioned in passing that Jimmy might have broken his toe. That sounds like an injury that might be coming out of this. And Paul Levesque had stated that Bronson Reed might be hurt. Again, it's whether that is storyline or not, that I don't know, but...
It appears Jacob Fatu is fine.
Nothing with Jacob Fatu has come up, at least at the press conference. And yeah, they did one more final Avengers sign-off at the entrance as the show went off the air.
So the major mystery of whatever this favor that Paul Heyman owes CM Punk, that's left to be determined. So not necessarily something we'll get follow-up on right now. I don't even know if like Reigns versus Punk need to have any interactions. It seems like at this point, this was just like, you know, a Marvel team up for like one night only, and then they go their separate ways eventually to meet up again. So we'll see when they might cash that in, when they might cash in this, you know, favor, what it could be. There are a lot of people that surround Paul Heyman, and CM Punk could want a favor from, I guess, any of those people, you know. Take your wildest guess right now, but yeah. I thought Reigns looked excellent in this match too. You know, I'm just trying to think back from like WrestleMania, where standing in the shadow of The Rock, I thought Reigns, like, as successful as those programs were, I thought his star power kind of took a bit of a hit. In this match, I thought he was at his best. You know, his slow moving created so much aura around him. He felt like the biggest star he had to me in a very long time. And I thought his chemistry with CM Punk was really amazing.
Yeah, I thought this was a very enjoyable, easy to digest show. I think like everything you would have wanted out of this men's War Games match, like this is going to be the heavy bloodline storytelling type of match. I think it delivered on that front. I thought there were some very good performances in the match. I continue to be very impressed with Jacob Fatu in these roles. I think they've done a great job with Bronson Reed. The Punk Reigns stuff was very strong. I'm very curious where Sami Zayn goes out of this, like a natural is at some point down the road is like Kevin Owens is something where like here's his best friend that has teamed up with Reigns. It's the exact issue he's having with Cody. But that's in the short term, though, it'll be interesting. Like, is Zayn kind of linked with the Usos after this?
Yeah, does everybody go their separate ways? Do they stick together as this sort of OG bloodline for a while? I don't know. Like, they all kind of had pretty successful solo careers at this point, and I don't necessarily need them to be even a thing every single time. You know, come together like when the bat signal shows up, but in the meantime, continue to tell your own stories, but maybe still have this link. You know,
a very good show, I thought, overall. What was your match of the show?
It was the men's War Games. You know, I think by design, in terms of length, certainly the thing that lasts with you the longest in the match. But I think also in terms of in-ring quality, you had a great three-way between Bronson Reed, Ludwig Kaiser, and Sheamus here. I thought the Damian Priest-Gunther match was also a very good match up until maybe, you know, a bit of a dirty finish, but you know that's.
I thought the last three matches all delivered in their different ways. I thought it made for like a really strong, you know, back half of the show, and it wasn't like, you know, women's War Games match. We went over it. It had its strong points as well. I thought Nakamura Knight was the weakest match on the show, and it served its purpose.
But it gave you like the kickoff to this Nakamura character. It also gave you a title change that I think might leave people a little bit satisfied in terms of just like, you know, relevant results.
Coming up December on the Post Wrestling Cafe, two editions of Rewind Away coming your way, including Dave Bautista starting in the M. Night Shyamalan horror film Knock at the Cabin. Plus, we will review Noah's Departure Card from 2004, featuring Kenta Kobashi and Jun Akiyama. Plus, reviews of ROH Final Battle, Strong Style Evolved, and the granddaddy of them all, the best and worst of show for 2024, with Braden Harrington, Davey Portman, Wei Ting, and yours truly. PostWrestlingCafe.com. Well, at this point, we're going to go over to the forum and see what everyone had to say. We have a bunch of people here weighing in on tonight's show from Vancouver. We'll start things off with Andrew from Cape Breton. It was a decent show tonight. I hate the pacing of these shows. I was able to wash my dishes, dry them, put the dog out, bring them back, and use the washroom between the end of the world title match and before the bell rung for the main event. I think next time
such a bad thing? You know, you got a bunch of shit done. All right. You don't have to do chores tomorrow. Okay. And then you got some wrestling to watch. Is that so bad?
He says the match of the night for me was the IC title match. I also liked seeing Shinsuke win the U.S. title despite his poor record on and off television. The low light of the show was the opening women's War Games match. Before Io Sky came in, I would have considered it one of the worst matches of the year. That being said, the crowd were into it, which really shows how much a hot product can mask bad wrestling. It's a lot like Attitude Era WWF, where some of the matches are atrocious, but the crowd go wild for it. Decent show overall. There were definitely a lot of bumps in like... figurative bumps in the road for, I would say, the first like 10-15 minutes of it. From the Io Sky point onward, I thought the intensity really increased. I thought the addition of Rhea added a lot to the match as well. That I can't call it a poor match, but it certainly did have a lot of rocky moments early on. Those chair shots were ungodly bad.
Let's go to Brian from New Jersey, who says, a pretty satisfying PLE. My favorite match was the IC title triple threat match. Women's War Games was a chore for me to watch until the match beyond started, at which point things got more fun and exciting. I thought the men's War Games had good momentum throughout and some well laid out moments, especially Punk saving Reigns from the tsunami. Even after this match, this feud must continue because of that. Gosh darn Ula Fala. Rhea Ripley's look tonight gave me House of Black vibes mixed with Beast Mortos. Shinsuke Nakamura should hook up with Junji Ito for this U.S. title run.
Well, if she's in House of Black, would that make her a babyface? Or a heel?
TBD.
Alexander from Portland. Strong outing tonight. Solid booking with some important story beats. Nia Jax being first for her team was audacious, but she pulled it off. Liv getting pinned by Rhea was the right pick. I'm curious... You were going
to
say
just on the Nia Jax. I mean, I think they needed a heavy on the women's side, on the heel side of things, because of the babyface advantage. You know, you couldn't have a 2-on-1 babyface advantage and have like Candice LeRae in there. So you did need Nia and Raquel in there pretty early on.
On Liv Morgan, he says, I'm curious how long her title match will be held off for, since Io has next. My moment of the night was Nakamura's entrance. Seeing him win filled me with joy. LA Knight has been a good champion, but he needs a solid storyline, and he hasn't had that since winning the title. He's much better in the babyface role when he's chasing. Here's hoping Nakamura gets a solid reign. What are your WrestleMania predictions for Solo Sikoa? He didn't have a match at the prior two Manias, and I'm having a hard time seeing a solid opponent for him now that he has lost.
I think you have a lot of options, like, even in the orbit of the particular match we saw tonight. Like, you know, so Jey Uso versus a Solo Sikoa, I think, would be an easy match to build to. They are legitimately brothers. And I think they could do enough creative to make that feel a little bit more personal. A tag team match with Jacob Fatu is also a possibility. You know, I know, like, maybe a lot of people would rather see either of them, like Jacob certainly in a singles match, and maybe Jacob versus Jay me being the more attractive one. But I think there's certainly a place. You know, he is a major character in the company right now.
I mean, they've dedicated so much to him, and he still has his question marks. Like, I think he's far from a finished
solo?
Product. Solo, yeah.
Like, but he's improving. He's showing signs that, and let's remember how young he is, or at least relatively young in experience, right?
It's a big role that he has been cast in. There's different options. Like the idea of, like, Roman and Solo, I just do not think that has the legs to go that amount of time. Let's continue.
All right, let's go to, what's this man's name? Abbas, who says, I just clicked off. Abbas, who says, the show was good, was a good one from start to end. Staying up until past 3 a.m. was worth it. That is a lot more than could be said about Bad Blood, which started off with an all-timer match while everything after that faded away like a wet fart in the wind. I should have turned off that one after the first match. Women's War Games had an unmemorable stretch until the match beyond. Glad for the revamp Nakamura, and I'm excited to see where he goes. Men's War Games match was as good and a fun to watch as expected. Nothing more, nothing less. That is in itself an inherently good thing. Watching the angles and stories told pay off in an expected way is only rewarding as a viewer, and that might be very well a milquetoast thing to say, but still, 7 out of 10.
Next up is Saeed from Vancouver. Fun show to be at, even though the people in the row in front of me seem to just be there to swear and yell random stuff, not to mention drunk and doing drugs. Way to go, staff that did nothing about it. Well, Welcome to professional wrestling, unfortunately. Hot crowd, but according to some online, that didn't come across on TV. Rogers is oddly mic'd up. I wouldn't say this was like a unenthused crowd. It was like not like your red hot crowd, but I thought the crowd response was fine throughout most of the night.
Portions of, like, especially like maybe the start of the War Games matches was a bit quieter, and sometimes that's to be expected because, you know, they're going at a slower pace. They don't have the biggest stars in there just yet. But I would say overall, like, it felt like, you know, a pretty, like, a good crowd, you know, 17,000 people in there. So, yeah. Rogers, the stadium.
Okay, Rogers Arena. Yeah.
Got it.
The start of the women's War Games match was rough. Keep a chair away from Naya. It picked up, and the crowd went nuts for Io and her high spot. People were there mostly for Io, Rhea, and Tiffy from that match. Solid ending. The Nakamura entrance was amazing live, and the crowd loved him winning, and some were shocked at it. Triple Threat was my match of the night, and people were bummed that Sheamus didn't win, and honestly sucked the life out of the crowd for a long while. Seems it bled into the world title match. They all woke up when Finn came out. Being a part of Jay's entrance was something like a concert. A kid next to me, no older than 11, knew the words and was jumping up and down. Crowd seemed hot throughout. We all went quiet when we thought that Jacob was injured. Very well done, WWE. Very fun experience. Some seemed disappointed that they didn't get a surprise return. I don't know what people... I think a lot of that was just in the lead up to this show, that they made such a big deal about it's the 1 year anniversary of Punk's return. But I mean, what are you going to pull out of your up your sleeve for doing something like that just for the sake of it? That would, you know, it's, you know, they did not go off with the bang like last year's show, but, you know, that was a very unique circumstance last year.
Yeah. I didn't think this needed a Dwayne Johnson or anything like that. I mean, it's our expectations can kind of get ahead of ourselves. I mean, what you got was a very good wrestling show, right? Let's go up next to Slim Sieber, who says, "Hey guys, just got back from my hotel from the show. It was a blast. Just got back to my hotel. It was a blast. The women's match was fun, even though it was a bit sloppy, especially Naya with her chair shots. Rio was super over in the building, as was Io. Nakamura Knight was probably the coldest match of the night, but there was a good reaction when Nakamura won. The three-way was awesome, and Sheamus was one of the most over wrestlers on the card. For the world title match, the crowd seemed split, with it leaning a little in Gunther's favor. Really good match. And the main event was insane. Crowd was so hot. Every babyface got a big chant, even Jimmy, which was nice to see. Also, I don't know if you caught it, but a big chant started for JT Miller of the Vancouver Canucks, who is currently on a leave of absence for a mental health break. No big surprises, but it was a super fun show with a hot crowd."
There were several chants that started, some of which I could not make out of, and I'm sure that was one of them. So thanks for that live note. Next is Robbie from London. "In a rare sight, I'm here to talk about WWE. Some friends of mine have been having gatherings for the big shows, and I have to say, I enjoyed this a lot more than Rumble, either Mania or SummerSlam. Mind you, I thought the women's War Games was actively bad, but the rest of the show ranged from good to great. Gunther and Priest was good, Shin and Knight was much better than I expected, and the IC title match was excellent, and the main event. Mind you, since I've always loved Reigns and the Usos, and my strong dislike of Punk, I was bound to be engaged and invested. Great time, and although there's no way I'll be watching the TV, I'll be back for the Rumble. 8 out of 10 show." So there you go. You got Robbie's viewing tonight, and he's gone for the rest of the year.
Lastly, let's go to Muggin, who says, "This was a strongly bookended show. The IC title triple threat almost ran away with it. Gunther and Priest was strong. Io Sky was the MVP of the Women's War Games match, and her signature trash can spot was her best one. The character work from Roman being able to put his ego aside to work with Punk was masterful. There was enough seeds planted for the future."
There you go.
When can you picture Punk and Reigns?
Man, I think that's something really big to do down the road. I would not be doing that immediately. In terms of, like, I would say even like Mania season, I think that's something for down the road.
Something you can even revisit like for a year from now. You know, like they both have different priorities at the moment. Reigns is trying to get his Ulafala back. Punk, I guess.
You have this link established with Heyman that mm-hmm. I think there's more of an argument to keeping Heyman in this role as opposed to like the speculation of him turning. That I think you kind of need Heyman to be this kind of conduit between these two. And when you pay off this favor, like this is, like you could do this in Mania season, or you could just put it into the back of people's mind and it's not addressed for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe Heyman, is he holding the grudge still for the whole phone and not calling me until 2 weeks ago?
They haven't really answered that, have they? Like, why did Paul Heyman...
Literally or figuratively, it went unanswered. Yeah.
You're right. But why did Paul Heyman have his phone disconnected? Are we still asking the question of Paul Heyman's true loyalties? Or did this match solve that?
No, I think they want to have that out there. I think
is that even still a question after this match? Because there was a lot of people speculating, oh, like Paul Heyman wore the red shirt. They mentioned it on the pre-show. Mm-hmm. Is that still a question after this? Are we still questioning whose side Paul Heyman is actually on?
I think they always want to have that sort of like dangling there. They've put out all these kind of storyline beats to support it. And if you have like The Rock as the guy that's this master manipulator, you could have, you know, Heyman as the one that is working with Rock. Like there's so many ways you can go about it, but I think for this Punk Reigns thing, I think they have something really huge between these two. Mm-hmm. And I think it is important to have Heyman somewhere as kind of the connective tissue between these two, as they're both now active on TV, even if they're on separate shows, and the ability to pull them back together is through Heyman, where they will have this kind of reluctant partnership and each other's trust now that you can exploit for a big program that down the road. So yeah, it was a pretty positive show based on the feedback here. A lot of people very high on that IC title match, which,
and a lot of people very low on Nia Jax's chair shots. That seemed universal.
Listen, I mean, we can only call them as we see them. It was not a pretty sight in that particular match, but there you have it. The 38th Survivor Series is in the books. Way, I mean, do you want to quickly give your rankings now, your updated rankings?
My top 38 Survivor Series, starting with
number 38. All right. We are going to sign off. This is wild. It's 11 p.m. I'm in my glory.
I could catch SNL. I mean, I'm not going to, but I could if I wanted to. I could watch the evening news. Or I could sleep, which is probably what I'll be doing.
You could do that as well. You know, I went to this. I was out with my my kids' friends and their parents, and the dad was we were walking home. He's like, John, I just watched the Mr. McMahon series. I was like, oh no, and it was quite something just to hear like this. He watched wrestling like way back in, like he followed WCW in like the boom period and knows very little about modern day wrestling, but he's like, yeah, this Vince McMahon's horrible. I was like, I mean, they cover a lot of ground in that 6-part series. Anyway.
It did do that job, didn't it? Of like,
there are so many people that their impression of Vince McMahon and WWE is going to be through the lens of that documentary because of the reach it's going to have.
It's sort of the definitive statement on Vince McMahon that currently exists right now. And I think that's the power of Netflix. So we're weeks away at this point from the WWE being a Netflix thing. So is that same, you know, friend's dad going to talk to you about Raw and, you know, basically, or any of these other things that are going to be Netflix?
I don't know, but the first thing I saw when I logged in tonight for Survivor Series, the screen popped up giving me the warning for me to acknowledge that January 1st, this network is gone. It will be moving to Netflix. Like, they are doing messaging.
Is this the last main roster PLE that we're going to get on the network, at least?
Well, no, because next week is WWE Deadline, way. Well, main roster PLE. But okay. Yeah, for a main roster show, yeah, this would have been the last one because we got we have Deadline and Saturday night's main event, and then we're into the new year.
I don't know if I'll miss it, truth be told. You know, well, I kind of like having everything in one place, at least for Canadians.
Yeah, well, I can't say anything for the Smoky Mountain Wrestling fans out there, but we will see what Netflix looks like on January the 1st. This move to Netflix, like, it is going to be gigantic for WWE. Like, really, really big. I already had high expectations for it, but I just think I think a year from now, we're going to look at this as like a massive, massive move for this company. Its awareness and the reach it is going to have is going to be, I think, mind-boggling. So there you have it, everyone. That concludes our review of the Survivor Series. Tomorrow night, it's a special Sunday edition of Collision Course as Kate from Montreal and John Cena are going to be covering 3 hours worth of AEW programming that aired earlier tonight. And they actually had a bunch of announcements for the Continental Classic. For this Wednesday, they're doing Shelton Benjamin against Kyle Fletcher and Claudio against Brody King that they had announced. The following week is Winter is Coming, which has Ospreay against Claudio and Brody King against Ricochet. And they're already getting ahead of things. December 18th is Ospreay against Darby Allin. So you've got a lot coming up. They also added Max Caster and Swerve Strickland to this Wednesday show on Dynamite. So lots of match announcements throughout Collision and Rampage.
Today. Yes, Collision and Rampage. That'll be out in the Post Wrestling Cafe for all of our patrons. If you like this podcast, if you're listening to us, some of you maybe for the first time, maybe coming off of the buzz from, I don't know, like maybe you're John's dad's or like John's kid's friend's dad, okay, and you're listening to the podcast like this for the first time, we are entirely supported by or at least mostly supported, I should say, by Patreon and all of you, all of our listeners who choose to subscribe to postwrestlingcafe.com, where they can get a bunch of bonus shows every single week, including coming up in December, the Best and Worst Of show, which will be a Post Wrestling Cafe exclusive. Along with that, Rewind Away, where we look back at retro reviews, including Dave Bautista in Knock at the Cabin, directed by M. Night Shyamalan. Is it the best Dave Bautista acting performance to date?
Yes, we're also going to be doing a review of Noah's Departure event from the Tokyo Dome in July of 2004. Reviews of Final Battle. We're going to have our final edition of Talk of the Year that's coming out this week. So you can always support us, postwrestlingcafe.com. We live off of cafe subscribers and varsity jackets. That's what keeps the Post Wrestling universe in orbit. So there you have it. And one last time, chop-tees.com/postwrestling, the Black Friday sale ending this Wednesday. So get that special loved one your Post Wrestling toque, and they will be forever in your debt. That is the favor that you can cash in anytime in the future if you get them a gift for your post-wrestling fanatic in your world. That's it for us. We're back on Monday night following Raw. Have a great rest of your weekend.
How do you feel when you switch to Geico and save on your car insurance? It's like going to work on one Thursday morning and thinking to yourself, just one more day until Friday. But then somebody in the elevator says, Happy Friday! Then you check your phone quickly and discover today is actually Friday. So yes, Happy Friday, random stranger in the elevator. Happy Friday indeed. Yep, switching and saving with Geico feels just like that. Get more with Geico.